You're listening to Between the Stripes LOI podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favourite shows from. Now here are your hosts, Kieran Burke, Jonathan Breyer, and Gary Riley.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Between the Stripes LOI podcast series 5 episode 15 coming your way this evening. It's Kieran Burke, John Breyer and Gary Riley on duty once again. We're going to be looking back at the results from both the Premier and First Divisions over the weekend, and we've got a couple of interviews for you as well. We're going to have a first, actually both of these men are joining us for the first time. Great to get some new voices onto the show. We're going to hear from the new Waterford manager, Mark Burcham. And John, I know you're a big fan of Mark from his time at Yeovil Town, so I'm sure that will be mentioned at some stage. But I caught up with Mark, and I definitely think he's going to go into the characters folder of this league. He's a great character, I have to say, after speaking to him at Oriel the other night. And we're going to hear from a member of the steering committee at Save Tolka Park, the campaign that's picking up a bit of steam at the moment. I spoke to John from the group a little bit earlier on, and we're going to have a discussion about their plans and their goals as a group. And of course, we'll look ahead to this weekend's games as well. And we'll talk Europe as well, because the League of Ireland side have learned their potential opponents for the next round of European football. And obviously, by the time this goes out, they'll probably know who they're actually playing. But we'll take a look at some of their potential opponents anyway and have a chat about that. As you can probably hear, I'm absolutely blocked to the nines with hay fever. So apologies for my voice being even more annoying than usual this week. So a good time to bring in my two co-hosts, John and Gary. How's life?
Very good, Kieran. You need to go see a good pharmacist about that hay fever, mate.
If only I knew a good one, John.
Yeah, indeed.
Gary, how are you?
Not too bad, Kieran. Doing well, thank you.
Right, let's get stuck straight into it, lads, and we'll go with the Premier Division first. And we'll start, John, with Sligo against Drogheda. A win for the Drogs, but I'm kind of reluctant to call it a surprise given how they've performed this season.
Yeah, well, as we've said, they've compounded all expectations, haven't they? But the way they're playing, and they're certainly putting themselves in with a chance of a European place. The way they're going, and I think most of us had this down as a home win. And Drogheda, you know, we had a bit of a discussion about you know, goal scorers in the league and who was the top forward. And you know, I pulled the name Chris Lyons out, and it was Lyons that got both Drogheda's goals in this game. He scored early on in the first half and then in the second half. So he's gone to top goal scorer, I think, equal now. And Sligo, for their efforts, they could only get a consolation late on in the 90th minute through Shane Blaney. So trying to keep going. And as I say, there could be an outside bet for a European place.
Yeah, Drogs currently fourth on 25, just 3 points behind St. Pat's. And a good point you raise on Chrissy Lyons as well, John. He's been absolutely fantastic. Aside from the goals he scores, his general contribution to that Drogs team, I think you're right to maybe consider him as one of the best number nines in this league. Gary, I suppose Sligo without Romeo Parks, maybe they missed their big man up front a little bit, but definitely a disappointing result for them given the form they've been in.
Yeah, I think we all called it a home win for Sligo last week, and it was still a surprise, and they probably were missing the presence of Romeo Parks up front to occupy the Drogheda defence. But we have to hand it to Drogheda, and Chris Lyons get two goals away in the showgrounds. Great result for them, and you know, we kind of going back to where we pegged them at the start of the season. We thought they'd be much further down the table, but they're proving everyone wrong and getting some good results on the board.
And only the top two, Sligo Rovers and Shamrock Rovers, have picked up more points on the road than Drogheda. And again, only Rovers and Pats have picked up more points at home. Because when you think of a newly promoted club coming up, you think, right, their home form is going to be important. But what they're doing on the road as well, they're just a good side. It doesn't matter where they go, at home, away from home. Drogheda, really good side. Tim Clancy doing a wonderful job. And I know I think Daniel McDonald tweeted it this week, that if Dundalk was a fully functioning club, Tim Clancy would be number one on their list in terms of a manager's position. Would both of you agree with that?
Well, I think he's done a fantastic job there, Kieran. And I have to say, it was just his recruitment. He's recruited really, really well. Yeah. And for a promoted team to be where they are is nothing short of miraculous the way the division works. So hats off. And why wouldn't he be favourite for that job? If, like we said, if Dundalk were anything at the moment. It's not even a good proposition, I don't think.
No, I think Dan said that himself, that Tim Clancy wouldn't touch the place in its current state. Would you echo that, Gary?
Oh, yeah, it'd be crazy to go there. He's having a good time, and he's been with Drogheda there for a while now. So he's doing flying high in the Premier in the first season back. It'd be insanity to go near Dundalk in the state that they're in at the minute.
100%. Let's move on. The game that we were involved in off the pitch, Gary, Longford Town against St. Pat's. We were out at Bishopsgate at 10:30 that morning, getting ready for our first stream on LOI TV. Long, long day at the office, still feeling a bit tired after it. But I think most people were fairly happy with the product. What was the general feedback like overall? And while we're on the subject, LOI TV, I think it had a rocky start on the opening night, didn't it? There was a couple of issues, but overall, the potential looks there for it to be a very good service.
Yeah, definitely. I think with the clubs getting their own, or being able to put their own mark on it and get involved properly. I think we said it last week that Longford Town were the only one that were doing it themselves, and everyone got media teams in. But that's, you know, that still doesn't mean that they can't, like clubs themselves can't put their own mark on it with graphics and commentators and stuff like that. So I think it's great to see that, you know, some maybe a bit of creativity coming into it from each club. I know across the entire service, you're going to see varying levels of production and graphics and stuff like that. But I think on the whole, the attempts by the club so far have been brilliant. I know I was quite happy with the Longford Town stream on Saturday night. I was a bit ropey on the replays. So for anyone listening and wondering, my apologies for that. I'm getting better. But I think on the whole, I was quite happy with it. And unfortunately, it just wasn't a great result on the pitch for Longford Town.
Yeah, let's talk about the game itself, John. What did we make of this? You were back in Bishopsgate for the first time in probably, what, well over a year. So first of all, great to have the fans back. I'm sure you enjoyed it as much as you could, result aside.
Yeah, exactly. Results aside, it was great to be back in the stadium. I was delighted to get a ticket and really enjoyed it despite the results. And unfortunately, this one sent Longford bottom this scoreline.
They had been bottom the night before, but I take it.
Technicalities, Kieran. But yeah, now it's 14 games now in the league without a win from Longford. It's not looking good. Lee Stacey had a good game, I thought. He made a couple of good saves early on. Paddy Barrett header, we all know how good he is in the air. He tipped that one over, and he saved a free kick from Coughlin, who was very, very good on the night, and from Benson too. But it was their usual weakness again. It comes down to individual mistakes and set pieces, and it was a set piece where Pat's opened the scoring through Robbie Benson. He headed home from a corner. Longford got a lifeline in the second half as Jarosz sliced a clearance, and the result was Manley was brought down. Dobbs scored the pen to give Longford an equaliser. Any hope of Longford getting anything out of this game was pretty much quashed and around the hour mark when Aaron Robinson made an awful clearance. And this is the story of the season, hasn't it? Individual mistakes. That led to the goal. Matty Smith firing a rebound after Stacey could only parry Forrester's shots. And again, any hope of Longford getting back into that game was snuffed out by a really, really good move as Matty Smith headed home from a very good cross to make it 3-1. I thought Pats were very good, I have to say, on the night. I thought their passing game. And, you know, I'm going to be really critical now, and there almost looked like a league difference between the two sides.
Yeah, no, look, I think that is a fair comment. I thought that myself when I was on commentary. Gary, I suppose we've probably been a little bit negative about the quality of the league this year. We've said at times it's maybe not the strongest league we've seen, but that was the best overall performance I've seen from a side. And there was still plenty of room for improvement in Pat's game as well, which is positive from their point of view. But their one-touch football, and the man John mentioned there, Coughlin, he was absolutely phenomenal. His overall hold-up play, the way he brings players into the game, little flicks around the corner, he can finish as well. He really has got it all. You'd probably like to see him score a few more goals, but as I touched on in the build-up to the game in my match programme piece, if they can find someone to complement Coughlin, I think Pats can go very close this year. And the only concern you'd have about Pats in a title race is you look at their bench, a lot of young players on it. Now, the young players, they come on, made an impact, and they have been making an impact. But if they get one or two injuries in key areas to the likes of Coughlin, Forrester, Benson, etc., you'd just be slightly worried. So if they can add some quality bodies to just beef up the squad, I think Pats, the way they're playing, can go very close.
Yeah, it's surprising to say, but they were brilliant in all areas of the pitch on Saturday night. Now, I probably didn't get to watch it as closely as I would have liked, but the bits that I seen, I thought some really, really nice play, very confident passing and confidence in the ball, which is always nice to see, no matter who has it.
The difference was, though, they were really nice to watch against Dundalk a couple of weeks ago too, but there was no end product to it. A lot of it was in front of Dundalk. Yeah. Whereas the big difference I noticed in their game, they were getting a lot of late, deep runs from midfield. Fellas timing the run perfectly to the back post and to the edge of the box, getting bodies in there and getting good crosses in and making things happen.
Yeah, Matty Smith did that a couple of times in both halves for Sligo and was a real danger. And I don't think Longford were wise to it and they didn't really learn their lesson. But I think with overall their performance, I know it's against a team that are bottom of the table, but I thought they were quite... I thought they were really confident, and that was particularly nice to see. Just their passing was brilliant. As you said, their one-touch stuff. Coughlin came in as a late change and was brilliant. And, you know, it's got the goals that got them over the line. But I think just on a Longford perspective, they got a penalty, probably a soft penalty as well, from a mistake at the back. Didn't really create enough chances. I think they had two shots on target throughout the game, which just, look, it isn't going to be good enough to get you anything in this league. So I think a couple of weeks now onto the transfer window, hopefully the club will be able to bring in a couple of players and see where we go then.
Well, I think this week is going to be make or break for Longford. Forget the transfer window. They need to get results in the next two games. They go to Oriel.
That's right, actually.
They go to Oriel, and a little bit like we kind of teased John a bit on the show about going on about Cork City all the time and teams going to Turner's Cross, that it's not the same club. Same can be said for Dundalk. We know what they can do. They thrashed, they got thrashed by Bowes and then they went out and beat Pats, but that club is in absolute disarray from top to bottom up there. There's no reason that Longford shouldn't be going there and eyeing 3 points. Forget about getting a result in Oriel. They should be going there trying to win. And then they have Waterford at home on the Monday. So if Longford come away from the next two games with nothing, you'd be seriously worried about them still being in the mix even before the transfer window comes. So look, we'll probably talk Longford again a little bit later on. Let's move on, John. Shamrock Rovers 1, Finn Harps 1.
Yeah, coup and buster this one, as many had this as a home banker, including myself. But
we all thought it'd be tight, though, didn't we?
Yeah, well, I think so. I think I can't remember what I had it down as. I think I had it down quite easy win for Rovers. I think I'd gone for 3-0 or something. But that goes to show how our predictions were this week, Kieran, because I think we're all pretty awful.
I won.
Sorry. Is that two in a row?
I came out on top this week.
I was seven measly points. But anyway, go on.
Yeah.
What did you get?
We got three each.
Dart.
Hey, I'm allowed an off week. Look, anyway, many had this as a home banker, i.e., me. But Harps have been pretty much full of surprises this season, and you know, Rovers scored the opener from really a defensive blunder. Siddiqui, who's normally pretty reliable, he was fast asleep and got robbed by Gaffney. He squared it to Aaron Green for the opener. It was just a tap-in, 1-0. But the equaliser, I think Alan Manners needs to have a good look at this one, and he should have blocked it. Foley squeezed it in from almost an impossible angle. I don't know how he scored that. Nobody should score from the angle he hit it from.
Go on, Adam. Other guy. Go on, Foley.
Yeah, I know. You keep trying to get him that move. Oel Abbey looked decent all night. He shot wide in the counter, but his pace caused problems. But then Rovers, you know, they had chances and they put a lot of pressure on Harps late on. But McGinley was good. He stopped one, and the Harps defence stood just about firm to get a point. And there was no last minute winner or injury time winner for this one for Rovers. So 1-1, a good point for Harps.
It's probably not a game worth overanalyzing, Gary, really. It's been the story of both teams' season. Harps surprising everyone, very organized, very plucky, but plenty of quality when they're on the ball as well. From Rovers' point of view, just really struggling to break teams down.
Yeah, we've highlighted it a few times this season, and I was very close to saying 1-1 actually. Last week, but I thought the difference.
He bottled it, John.
He did. He was nowhere near saying 1-1. But
no, he did. I remember him saying it, but he bottled it.
Thank you, John, and thank you, Kieran.
You're welcome.
But I just thought the fans would bring them over the line. But look, I think it just goes to show that we all, I don't know if we thought, well, did we think Rovers were going to walk the league? To a certain extent, I did anyway. But it just shows that it's just not that handy anymore. And the way Harp set up, and again, and a lot of teams will set up against Rovers, it's going to be a lot of men behind the ball and try to frustrate them. And that's how Rovers got our Harps. You know, they got the goal back and then they kind of sat in and made it very difficult for Rovers to break them down. But I think that's going to be a story for a lot of the season. Teams can see now it's a very viable way of stopping Rovers' attack. So they'll probably make more use of that as the season goes on. So a bit of a head-scratch job for Bradley to see how he's going to counteract that when he comes up against it.
I think he's hoping he gets a fairly fit and up to speed Richie Towell. Might take a couple of weeks, but if Towell comes in anything like we know what he can do, I think then he is the answer to the problems they're having. And I was the same as you. I thought it'd be tight. I was going to say, I think 1-0 Rovers, and then when I remembered the fans, the fact they'd have 1,000, I went 2-0 for my prediction. But just while we're on that subject, got a good little chuckle out of Rovers' statement today. Sure you did as well. Despite a build-up which featured the usual concerted anti-Rovers background noise we have come to expect since the creation of Rovers 2 team late in 2019, the successful pilot vindicated the decision of the government in organising these games in Tallaght Stadium. I mean, what is that about?
Yeah, you'd swear the Rovers committee built the stadium brick by brick themselves over the last few years. Like, look, fair play to them. They were chosen to do it. They did the job. But yeah, a completely baffling statement.
Like, everyone else has forgotten about Rovers too. It's gone. It's in the history. And Shamrock Rovers themselves are still going on about it. Like, I think...
Yeah, the sad thing, I know we said it last year, at the end of the season, there was still talk about Rovers too and how there was opposition against it. This was after, you know, months off football because of the pandemic. The actual pandemic itself. Went the season unbeaten and won the league. And also got to the FA Cup final, but they're still worried about the Shamrock Rovers 2 in the first division. I don't understand the mentality at all, but look, there you go.
Yeah, look, maybe it's trying to build the world against us type of mentality, kind of siege mentality. I don't know. And I just thought I came across it.
Because they were I think they were about one of the only clubs that voted for the promotion up and down, didn't they? You know, so to come out with something like this just seems very, very strange. Yeah. Yeah, I'll have a pint of whatever Z's had.
Just thought I came across a bit childish. But anyway, look, this podcast can be childish at times too. Let's move on and we'll talk about Derry against Bowes. John, you want to run us through this?
Yeah, it was a bit of a late show in this one, but I've no idea how Bowes didn't go one up early on in the second half. There was a bit of a scramble. The ball dribbled onto the post and it was on the line and somehow it got hacked away when it looked easier to score. So I don't know how Bowes didn't go one up. They eventually did, though. It was Ali Coote. He shot from the edge of the area in the late show, 84th minute. Must have thought they got it won. And then Derry equalised with what I thought was a controversial goal from Mark Walsh. There's some debate as to whether or not this one crossed the line. Both players were absolutely incensed by the decision. Goalkeeper was up with the referee, you know, insisting that it hadn't crossed the line. But look, the ref gives the goal and it finished 1-1.
Yeah, and again, Gary, Rory Higgins just getting points on the board, isn't he? Maybe not blowing anyone away, but I don't think anyone expected him to with the group of players he has. He's doing perfectly fine. They're moving up the league table. Bowes, a bit of lost ground, I suppose, on the top three. They're 7 points behind Pats now, but what did we make? We probably weren't overly surprised with this result, were we?
No, we weren't. I think I said 1-1 myself. But yeah, look, really disappointing from a Bowes perspective because that was a good goal from Ali Coote outside the box. Drilled it into the left corner and he had a good game. But look, I think Derry City, blowing anyone away is not their concern at the minute. They need to keep away from this relegation battle. Now, I know that seems to be Waterford and Longford are going to be in that and everyone else will be safe enough, but you know, who knows what can happen over the course of the season. We're not even out of the halfway stage yet.
From what I'm hearing, there's going to be a big July at Derry.
Well, they probably need it, but, you know, you can even see the changes that Rory Higgins has made so far and the benefits that they're getting out of it. They are going up the table. They haven't lost in a few games. They're drawing a good bit, but, know, they dug themselves out of that game in the last minute. I thought across the line myself. No, I was watching the same video that everyone else has seen, but I thought it looked across the line. But, you know, Bowes, they've conceded crap goals a lot this season, and it's just not good enough for them. They need to be more solid at the back, and I think, you know,
especially going into Europe, whatever about qualifying for Europe next season, they're not coming European campaign. They'll be slaughtered alive if they defend like this.
Exactly. So, you know, a lot of work needs to be done on that defence. But look, we're 15 games in. They've been suspect at the back for since day one, and it hasn't looked to be fully rectified at all. So Keith Long has a bit of work to do.
Let's move on. This is the game I was at on Friday night, Dundalk against Waterford. Only words to describe the Dundalk performance is a disgrace. It was absolutely woeful. They really could have lost by more in the end. No fight, no desire from the players. They get a penalty. Hooban stucks it away nicely. After that, it's a comedy of errors from a Dundalk point of view. The equaliser comes. It's just a simple through ball. It splits the Dundalk defence into ribbons. John Martin tucks it away well, in fairness to him. And then the second goal, I mean, you would not see it at schoolboy level. Waterford get a corner. Dundalk watch a Waterford player walk over to offer the short option. Nobody tracks him. The ball's passed to the player that offers himself up short. He dinks it into the back post without anybody even going near him to press him down. And it's bundled in the back post. I mean, it was absolutely comical, the goal. The goalkeeper, Abibi, wasn't... I don't think he was at fault for any of the goals. But, I mean, if you want a laugh, if you're feeling a bit down in the dumps, go and watch this lad play football. And that might sound extremely harsh, but this fella does not look like a footballer. I think you said that last week, John.
Yep, I did.
He's absolutely terrified to come off the line, despite the fact he is built like a unit. I won't use the word, but he's built like a house, this fella. He should be coming out, and if there's anything in his path, it should be obliterated. He should be going through it to claim the ball. He's coming out with sticking the fist out. He's afraid he's going to get hurt. If he does, someone collides into him. He's down on the ground, rolling around. He can't kick. He's not a goalkeeper. I don't know where they got him from, but he is a liability waiting to happen. As I said, he wasn't at fault majorly for any of the goals, but you know each and every week he's going to give you something. There was a cross that came into the area at one stage in the game. I don't know what. I'm still sitting here now trying to figure out, was he trying to catch it? Was he trying to punch it? He just came out and he kind of slapped at it. And he was just blessed that it didn't fall to anyone in particular. But, I mean, Longford are going up there on Friday. I'll be absolutely disgusted with Longford if they're not hammering crosses and shots in left, right and centre. Because this man is an absolute liability waiting to happen. And the third goal then as well, it comes along and it's game over at that stage. And as I said, they could have had a penalty after that, Waterford. And they could have ran out by further. And the fact that the Dundalk fans had waited so long to get back into Oriel, some of them couldn't even stomach staying around for the last few minutes. And the players, there was a few boos at the end as well. It's turning into a really toxic atmosphere up in Oriel, Gary. And as I said, from a Longford point of view, Longford have to go up there and exploit that on Friday night.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, we've all seen the BB's faults. And it could be a case that Cherry comes back in for the Longford game. Like, I know you said he hasn't made any mistakes, but I'd say the defence in front of him are, you know, on eggshells around him.
Yeah. To be
ball
fair,
coming in over my head.
To be fair to Abibi too, I mean, he has an international defender in front of him the other night, Sonny Nattestad. And I fully respect he was coming back from a spell of injuries. How he's an international footballer based off that performance the other night. He was absolutely bullied by any Waterford player that came near him. He was all over the shop, Nattestad. He was woeful.
Well, there you go. A lot of hopeful stuff there for Longford Town fans listening, including myself. Look, it's really hard to know what's going to happen with Dundalk, you know, and the news today about Chris Shields, you know, on the way out. But a few weeks ago, he said that he was going nowhere. Was that right, or did I make that up?
Yeah, no, you're spot on. He was asked, I think, could have been Jerry Malone. He said he wasn't going anywhere, certainly in the short
Not
term.
Not this season.
It looks like, again, listening to a lot of Dundalk podcasts this week, speaking to people, it looks like a major cost-cutting exercise is now underway. I'd fully expect Peak Six to be gone by the end of the year. It looks like they're just getting ready to move house. Now, that's pure speculation. I don't have anything on that, but just the fact that they're not offering long, that they were offering at one stage 3-year deals to their best players, Sean Gannon, etc. Then all of a sudden, this offseason, they decide, no, everyone's getting 1-year deals. Some players were offered less than 1-year deals, as we famously know, and they've since left the club. The fact they haven't hired a manager, I mean, do they not want to pay for a manager? Because Jim McGilton tells us there's hundreds of top-class applicants. yeah, he's still there on the sideline. It's a total mess from top to bottom. And as I said, from a Longford point of view, Longford have to go there and fully exploit that on Friday night, because Dundalk now are on 17 points, Longford 10 points behind them, Waterford on 9 points. So if Longford go up there and beat Dundalk, and we see Chris Shields depart, and we see the wheels well and truly come off this Dundalk team, even more than they're already off, there's nothing to suggest they can't be in the mix for a playoff spot.
No, certainly not. With the help of God, Longford Town will put them in it. 6 points out for Longford Town's next two games would be absolutely massive and would turn Longford season right around. But I think, you know, the falling apart and the Dundalk are doing at the moment is quite amazing to see, and how it happened in such a short space of time. But, you know, we highlight Cork and what they've done in the last couple of years, how easy it can happen. But look, I'm sure John will be looking forward to a possible 3 points for the town on Friday night.
Yeah, John, let's bring you in. What did you make of the Dundalk's performance the other night?
Woeful. I thought that was awful. You know, like you said, the keeper gives you no confidence. I know we're talking there about Longford going to Dundalk, but last time Longford went to played against Dundalk, it was the other keeper, it was Cherry, that made a couple of absolute blunders. So they really are, they're throwing a coin as to who goes in goals there, and it's just woeful. I mean, nobody had that down for Waterford to go there and win 3-1. I mean, they were bottom of the league. No matter what Dundalk's problems are, they still have good players there. But these players, just have they given up the ghost or something? They need to have a good, hard look at themselves. They really do. And, you know, I know you talked about Natterstadt being an international, but you got to remember, he's an international for the Faroe Islands. They don't have anything like a serious league neither. And, you know, and they were laughing stock of Europe for a long, long time, Faroe Islands. So, you know, that okay, they've been getting, you know, they've improved, but, you know, they're off a very, very low base. And for a big lad, he didn't half look poor. So I think you've got to really, really question these signings that were made. I don't know who on earth's made.
Is there one you could say that's worked out? I don't think you could. I know I've seen some people saying they think Yurkowskis is good. Gary, in the game against Longford, he was a laughing stock, some of his defending. He's good going forward, I'll give him that. As a defender, you wouldn't see some of the stuff in Sunday League while he was at against Longford. Maybe he was just having a one off day, but I don't think so. Again, he's playing, he's capped for Latvia. They got thumped by Germany 7-1 the other night.
I'd love to tell you these lads' agents are. My guess is the same fella, because I don't know how on earth he's got them three a move. But
Zahiba's come in. He's clearly unfit. He could be a very good player. He must be a good player given the clubs he's played for. He's unfit, but that was to be expected. He hadn't kicked the ball competitively since last November. He's come in now. He was away on international duty, so he's in quarantine. I mean, you're bringing them own problems on yourself by signing an international player, so you can't whinge about it now. You knew that was coming. The Korean player they brought in, he's barely featured. There's not one of them overseas players that has come in, and the reported money they're on, you couldn't say any of it is justified. You'd rather have Massey, Gannon, Rogers still around the place.
Look at Mountney, he was excellent the other night as well against Longford. Yeah. You know, players that can still very much do a job for Dundalk.
John, every player that's left is above Dundalk in the table right now, Derry are ahead of Dundalk as well, so patching. I am right in saying that Derry are ahead. It's tight enough between the two of them.
It's been very good recently. We talked about patching, you know. Yeah. Every single player that's left is playing well.
Yeah, obviously it looks like he's going to be coming back on from his loan deal at Derry to Dundalk. If I was him, I'd be saying, no, I'm happily fine where I am. I'm playing football here every week. You know, I'm going to be integral to this Derry team. Can the same be said from a Dundalk? He's going to go back in. Will he be in and out of the team again? What do you think of that, Gary?
Yeah, look, he's playing some great ball in Derry, but I think from a Dundalk perspective, regardless of what the player wants, they need him back. You know, Shields has gone there. I know there are different types of midfielders, but the way he's playing at Derry City at the moment, I'm sure he'd absolutely love to stay, and Rory Higgins would love to have him stay. But it's going to be very difficult for Dundalk to say, well, fair play to you, lad. You're having a great game up there in what are borderline relegation rivals at this point. Mm. It's very hard for them to go, keep going up there, keep banging in goals and beating teams around us, or getting points on the board when we're in trouble ourselves. So, look, it's going to be an interesting conversation, I think, for Patching and whoever he speaks to in Dundalk. I don't know who even he'd be able to speak to in Dundalk.
Well, look, I suppose from Patching's point of view too, maybe he's thinking if I do go back, I might get some European football. So maybe he will be keen to go back to Dundalk.
Well, he's got a contract with an end date, so he's probably got no choice at the end of the day.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. Look, we'll move on very quickly because we didn't really give Waterford their dues there. Waterford vastly improved since I've seen them last. Opening 5 minutes, they were very composed on the ball, but then Dundalk got on it and they were up against it, but they looked well organised, fairly comfortable. They concede. The penalty was poor. They lead themselves one-on-one against big Ollie Mitskogan. Penalty given away, it's converted. That was poor defending, their manager said so. But aside from that, they brushed themselves down, got on with it, got back into the game. I thought Prince was very good again. There was other individual performances. I think they look a lot more solid at the back with Kyle Ferguson back in there. He's been unavailable recently due to the COVID incident at the club. And you can just see Murphy makes such a huge difference in goals as well. The way he comes out and interacts with the younger players and his back four, he's going to be huge. And he made a massive save at one stage in the game as well, where it looked like McElhenney was about to score, but he pulled off a massive save. So there's lots of positives. And after the game, I spoke to their manager, Mark Bertram.
Now I'm here with Waterford boss Mark Bertram after a 3-1 win at Oriel Park against Dundalk. Even before you came into this team, this Waterford team have been so close to getting results like this during the year. They've put in really good performances, but they've come away with nothing. So to come up here and not only win, but to win so convincing, has to be a huge morale boost for your players.
Yeah, it was. And everything we went through, COVID and not being able to train, the lads were so unfit, and it was just getting through to the break. So I took them in some dark places on some hard days there to get them mentally strong and to deal with it. We went away, we done some team bonding, rafting I think it was, and again, but then we sat down and all spoke to each other, told some things about ourselves that no one knew, and just the togetherness. And I can't speak highly enough of them. They've been fantastic. A lot of them, it's a young squad, and you need a result to believe in the process. They've been 100% in it. If you look at all our games, we've improved. And today, we deserved it. We try and keep the ball. I've changed the way that we've played, as in we like to be high tempo and press and want to, again, keep the ball. And just getting them a little bit streetwise on the pitch, because sometimes they're a bit too naive, but I said, if you're going to just be positive, whatever you do, if you make a mistake, make it positive. And that mindset's different. If we've let that goal in on the penalty, they'd have probably let another one or two in 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
We've come back, we've equalised before half time, and again, we can be honest with each other. We can tell each other where I can say, look, that's not good enough, you weren't good enough. There was two or three first half that was below their normal standard. You can tell them, and it's clear as day, and they come back out and they improve. And it's a no excuse mentality. We want to be honest with each other in that dressing room. Honesty, hard work, and team spirit, and we'll start hopefully climbing up the table.
I think there's very few negatives to take from this game, but maybe the goal you do concede, the penalty, I think maybe you leave yourself one-on-one against the big man, Ollie, and he gets into the area and he gets the penalty off. So you might be just slightly disappointed with that, I suppose.
No, definitely, but I was disappointed with Cameron there, because that's naivety. If your centre-back partner goes to the ball, you've got to be up with him, and if they win the flick, he's offside. But he's managed to get pinned, but it was an honest mistake, and he was on a booking, and then Cameron had a little wobble up for 10 minutes after that. So I said to him, like, forget about that, man up, let's go again. And he was excellent in the second half, and we focused a lot on set plays and set pieces, because we let one in at Bowes that were poor. We've not scored a couple, so we focused on that. And even this morning, video analysis this morning on it, saying there's a chance to get it, and it's good when that comes off. People might have said there's a few dubious decisions, as in I've played Prince, who's a winger up top, because we're struggling for centre forward. John Martin, who's a number 10 or a 9.5, I've played him out wide. But I think a more dubious decision, me trying to grab a bit of facial hair, that hasn't really worked, so I might have to keep it now.
How important was the goal just before half time, the timing of it, and what it meant going into the dressing room?
Yeah, it was, but I said to Dave and the staff on the bench, we look completely different with our body language after we let in the goal compared to what we did against Bowes. We let in the goal against Bowes, and we could have let two or three in before half time. We've reacted, got in there, and even if we'd have gone in 1-0 down, I do believe we had the belief to keep going. But again, football's, you need luck, and we maybe got a bit of luck in there in the first half, but getting that goal right before half time. But I think we will deserve it. And I think there was a blatant penalty as well, second
yeah,
half.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. It looked a stonewaller to me.
Yeah, I thought it was. And I think if it maybe weren't 3-1, we might have got it. Well, I'd have been a lot more animated if we didn't get it. But that's the officials. But I think the officials, they've got to take credit on our second goal because they played a great advantage. So I will give them stick. I think there was a few offsides that we didn't get there in the second half. But fair play to them on that second goal. And just really happy for the lads because they deserved it. They've been down. And just trying to change a professional winning mentality. Just little things in training, just I'm on them all the time about body shape, body language, communication. Communication's the one as well. Like, come here and they was like mime artists, not saying anything. So
I noticed early on in the game, actually, I think one of the defenders maybe made a bit of a mess of a clearance, and Brian Murphy came out. He said, look, it was a snake, it's okay, learn from it. Yeah. So to have that experience there must be very important.
Yeah, it is. And the Niall, I've known him for a while, especially at QPR, and Murph knows I don't like goalkeepers as captains. It's all right for Spain, they can do it, and Dino's off back in the World Cup. For me, I like my captains out in the middle, and I think Niall's done brilliant there as well, and it's getting them to talk. I don't have a go. If you make mistakes, I won't vocally berate them. I do encourage them. I'll only berate them if it's stupidity, if you're out of position, because we work in our team shape, and two, if it's lack of effort.
Final couple of questions. Obviously, I know you were talking in the last couple of weeks about maybe some new bodies coming in, but this win, is, I'm sure it gets the group gelled together and morale and everything. So how do you feel now going into the transfer window in the next couple of weeks? Do you still need to bring fresh bodies in?
Yeah, 100%, and it's still our process. And like I've said to the lads, I'm going to be brought bodies in, so it's your shirt to keep. And whoever we bring in has got to buy into what we're doing here and this process and this the process of building a winning mentality. So, and we do our due diligence on our players, and if they haven't got a good attitude, we won't bring them in. And I'd rather attitude over ability any day of the week.
Finally, it was all eyes on Rome tonight with the Euros getting underway. Rome wasn't built in a day, but you're off the bottom of the table tonight, so it's small steps but important steps for Waterford.
Yeah, no, what was the score in that game? Is it still
I don't know, I haven't checked.
Yeah, well, Rome wasn't built in a day. But I'll tell you what as well, we weren't used to this tropical weather here. It's been absolutely hammering down for 4 or 5 days in Waterford, so it's like coming to Mexico, this weather here. It was like subtropics.
Brilliant stuff, Mark.
Cheers,
thank you.
Thanks.
For our latest podcasts, video content, and exclusive columns from Stephen Henderson, Connor Hoey, and James Rogers, visit BetweenTheStripes.net.
Okay, moving on to the First Division, lads. John, Wexford 1, Treaty 2.
Yeah, well, I think most of it has Treaty down to win this one. But again, it was close enough. And Wexford, they've been competitive now. And we couldn't say that a few weeks ago when they were suffering some big defeats. And they actually went into the lead with this one in the second minute through Kyle Robinson. But Treaty, who are third in the table now, I think, have started the season very well. And they got the two goals very quickly together, 10th minute, 19th minute through Anthony O'Donnell and Jack Lynch. And that was it. No matter what Wexford tried, there was no equaliser. So Treaty go marching on.
Yeah, look, Treaty go to Cove next, Gary. That's not an easy one. But to be third in the table now and going down to it, I know Cove had a good result at the weekend, a great result at the weekend. But And as I said, it's a difficult place to go. But if they can pick up 3 points there, they could potentially be second in the league in their first ever season in the League of Ireland. What a job Tommy Barrett is doing.
Yeah. I didn't think they'd be this good. But my God, he's really turned them into something. I don't want to say special just yet, but they're really turning in some brilliant results. It was a difficult place to go down there to Wexford after the way that Wexford have turned it around in recent weeks, and you know, not being total whipping boys in the league so far. So it's a great result to go down there and get the win. And you know, when you're looking forward to the next couple of games and treat you looking going, geez, actually we could really be in the mix here coming up to the halfway point of the season. So but as you said, I think the Cove game on the back of a couple of good results themselves, that's going to be a very tricky one for Treaty.
John, let's talk about what was probably the shock result of the weekend. UCD 1, Cove Ramblers 2.
Yeah, very, very big surprise. I had this down as a pretty easy result for UCD. I think you had the same, but anything but. And It was two goals in 2 minutes that sunk UCD. It was Jake Hegarty with both goals. UCD, they did get one back through a penalty from Colin Whelan, but there was no equaliser there. And yeah, I think you can have a look at that one and say that's the shock of the weekend.
Yeah, Gary, you didn't seem to think so, did you?
No, I think Galway beating Athlone was a bigger shock, to be honest. but no, somewhat messing aside, I think Cove going up to the ball was a huge result for them. Didn't see it coming at all. And no, I think we've mentioned UCD's frailties at the back, and kind of came to fruition here where they couldn't outscore their opponents. I know, obviously, you need to outscore your opponents to win, but like, because they're so...
Yeah,
leaky at the back.
The mentality of you score two, we'll score three. I know exactly what you mean, but they're not able to just shut out a game, as we said on previous shows. And that now leaves them 8 points behind Shell. So starting to get a little bit dominated at the top, aren't they?
It is, yeah. I think John will be happy to hear that. I think Shelburne have this one sewn up. I know there's only 11 games in, but I don't see them being stopped at all. And even a combination of UCD and Treaty, I don't think they'll be able to lay a glove on Shells at all, which is for good news for you, John.
Of course, Shells looked more than safe last year in the Premier, didn't they? But that's a different type of pressure, I suppose, once you start getting sucked into a relegation dogfight and whatever's going on in the dressing room, it's a difficult thing to get out of. But they're top of the league. Everyone's in good form, I'd imagine, down there. So, it is very hard to see them and stop now, I have to say. Let's move on and talk about that game you touched on, Gary. We'll get John's thoughts first, though. Galway 2, Athlone 1.
Yeah, I think we all got a bit of a surprise from this one. I think we all expected it to be close, but Athlone to win it. And indeed, they went one up through Shane Barnes, who's been a quality signing and scored a fair few goals for Athlone. But Galway got back into this one late in the second half, a penalty from Rory Keating, when we know the Athlone defence can be a bit leaky and shaky. And sure enough, the winner came in the third minute of injury time from the GAA player, Porrick Cunningham, hitting one under the bar.
Very good. Gary, Galway, despite as much as we've criticised them, they've got a knack of scoring late goals, haven't they?
Yeah, they do. But unfortunately, a lot of games bailing them out of ridiculous situations that they found themselves in. And look, they came back from 1-0 down at home. Fair play to them for that. That shows a bit of metal in that they have. But I didn't expect this to be a win for Galway. I just don't see it at all, you know. And this wasn't a comfortable result for them. I know it's against Athlone, who are doing well this season, but a 93rd minute winner, great to get it and great for everybody involved, but not really showing what a club with their backing and, you know, full-time status and stuff like that in the first division is just not good enough still.
Yeah, look, they're level on points with Athlone now. Athlone are just inside the final playoff place by way of goal difference. So again, a bit like, look, we're coming on to Bray in a minute and I'm dreading that discussion already after last week's show. But like we touched on last week, you're probably still expecting Galway to feature in the playoff places, but they really aren't doing enough with what they have there at the moment. So I don't think any of us are going to get too carried away with that result. John, Cork 0, Cabo 2, how the mighty have fallen.
I think we
just need to open up by before we go on about Cork, because I think when you look at a result like this, it's only natural you think of Cork and you go on about how far they've fallen. I don't think we've given Cabin Teely enough credit this season for the job Pat Devlin's doing there. Fourth in the table on 18 points, working off very little resources and putting together some great results.
He does it every year, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he seems to do it. And then Laboutis there, he's got a man that knows where the goal is. So, you know, they keep losing their key strikers every year, and then they seem to find somebody who just comes in and does the same. So, fair play to him down there. But we've talked about Dundalk, and now we're talking about Cork, and these were the two big teams, weren't they? From only as long as 2 or 3 years ago, you know, it seems to be always the old. The cup final was Cork against Dundalk, and it's how the mighty have fallen. And this was deserved for Cabo. You know, Laboutis with a goal, 37th minute. And they had to wait a long time to make it certain, but Jordan Payne with a probably last kick of the game, 95th minute, made it 2-0, and Cork go from bad to worse. But Cabin Teely, good shout for playoffs now.
Yeah, Gary, what was your thoughts on the game?
Yeah, no, it was a good finish from Labuta. It was all right. Look, it's I said it a thousand times. Cork are going to be in the first division for a while. I wouldn't be looking back on where they've fallen from, because they've been falling for a while. This is regular, pure. This is the ultimate in first division stuff. Losing 2-0 at home to Cabo. Disappointing for the new fan, but the fans that were allowed back into Turner's Cross for another pilot. So disappointing for them that Cork couldn't turn it on for them and get a positive result. But I have to hand it to Pat. He's doing a great job there in Stradbroke, on, as we all know, limited resources and key players leaving pretty much every season. And he keeps getting the most out of his players, and you have to really hand it to him. Great result for Cabo.
Right, lads, let me have it. Bray 1, Shells 4.
Shall I start?
Yes, John, please, with pleasure.
Yeah, well, I'll go through the game first, because Shells went 1-0 from Michael O'Connor in the 11th minute. Bray equalised through Connor Clifford, but then it was all Shells, and Ryan Brennan got 2, one from the penalty spot, and Ali Gilchrist got the fourth. Look, Shells have way better team than anyone else in that division. They're romping home. They're going to win it by a country mile, the way I see it. Did anybody tip Bray?
No, to win the game last week. No. I'm not that bad just yet.
Bray have at least have stopped drawing matches, but they've got walloped instead because they've drawn too many. they're having a really poor season. I know we talked about Gary Cronin the other week being under pressure, but surely he's in serious pressure now after that.
Go on, Gary, let me have it.
Yeah, well, like, if you look at their home form, I think they've won one at home this season, like in the five games so far. Like, that's not good enough. I know they're third in the away form, but like I just can't get over how, you know, they kept the bulk of the squad from last season. And they've been absolutely toothless in the way that they've played, both home and away. I don't think anyone on the planet thought that Shells were going to lose that game or even come away with less than 3 points. Just wasn't a runner. Surely to God, Kieran, you have to say now that Gary Cronin is under pressure. Whatever about getting into the playoffs and all of that stuff, and that's, you look at it at the end of the season, they're getting pumped at home by Shelburne, who, yes, have the best squad in the league, and fair play to them for that. But they're not within a country mile of where Shelburne are. It's so poor.
Yeah, I thought it might be a bit tighter. I fully expected Shells to win, but I was very, very disappointed with the manner of the performance and the result, I suppose, when I seen it come through. They've got another tough one this weekend against UCD. At the moment, they're 2 points outside the playoffs, but if this result damages confidence the way you'd expect it to, and they are to lose a couple of games, then maybe we will be having a different discussion in a couple of weeks in regards to pressure there, because there's absolutely no way in hell that they cannot be in the playoffs with the resources they have. They have to simply be in that top five. So if that starts to look in danger, then I definitely think we might be having a different discussion, but you can probably hear it in my voice. Go ahead.
If they're not in the playoffs this year, they may throw their hat at the game altogether. It's not feasible, I don't think, this year for Bray not to be at least in the playoffs. Yeah. Well, look, they did last year.
I think we were kind of saying the same two or three seasons ago when they missed out in the playoffs that time, that they should have been in there, the players they had. They missed out on it. And that's why we were so surprised by them last year in terms of the way they bounced back and almost won the title. So, as you said, we were expecting them to kick on this year. Hasn't happened. I'm very disappointed. I'm disappointed for Gary as well. And hopefully they can turn. hopefully they can turn it around in the next few weeks. But that was certainly a really, really damaging result for them. Let's move on and discuss this weekend's fixtures in the first division. And we're going to start up with Wexford against Shells. And then after this, we're going to hear from John, who's on the steering committee of the Save Talca Park campaign. And we're going to have a fascinating chat with him about the group's goals, I suppose, and the reason they've got that campaign up and running. So that's still to come, and it's very, very interesting because, been totally honest, I have to say, I was very, very skeptical of the campaign. I thought, you know, it sounded a bit pie in the sky stuff to me, but after speaking to John today, I actually thought he had some very interesting points to make, some interesting proposals. So I'd love to get our listeners listening to that and getting their thoughts on it. But as I said, we'll get into the game itself first. Shelburne play Wexford this weekend. It's down in Ferry Carry Park. And John, I'll go to you for this one first.
Well, yeah, we talked. Wexford ran Shells quite close actually earlier in the season, didn't we? I think we expected a big result for Shells, but they just scraped past Wexford. But that team's well gelled now at this stage is Shells, and like I said before, they've just got quite clearly the most quality of the teams in that league. Wexford for a bit of promise, they're still rock bottom, and I can't see them getting anything out of this. So I'm going to go 3-0 Shells.
Okay, Gary.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar to that. Wexford, for all their good play in the last few weeks and, you know, seem to be turning a corner in both performances and results, Shells are just a different animal at the moment. And John, I'll follow you with 3-0 Shells.
Okay, I'm going 2-0 Shells myself. Wexford, though, if they can just, you know, keep it respectable, I think it's another good sign for them because, as John has said, this squad is far superior to anything else in the league. So Wexford go in there with no pressure on their shoulders, and their manager, Ian Ryan, he'll just want to put in a positive performance and keep working behind the scenes on what he's been doing in the last few weeks, which has certainly brought about some improvements in results and performances. But as I said, let's break for an interview with John from the Save Talca Park campaign. Now, I'm delighted to be joined by John Murnock, one of the members of the steering group at Save Talca Park. I'm sure you've seen the campaign on social media over the last while. It seems to be picking up a bit of steam as well. So we're going to chat to John about the campaign to save one of Irish football's most famous venues. John, how are you keeping?
Kieran, thanks so much for asking me on.
John, I suppose when I've been talking to people over the last while about the campaign, the first question they always hit me with, and I can't answer it, so that's why we have you on. Why has it taken so long, I suppose, for this campaign to gather up the type of momentum it has? Because we knew probably, what, maybe 3-4 years ago that the plans was for Shelburne and Bowes to move in together at Dalymount Park. It seems to have taken quite a while for maybe Shell fans to mobilise themselves into this group. So that's the first question I'll open with.
Yeah, look, that's a fair question, I suppose. It's been asked a few times recently. I mean, some of your listeners would be familiar with Shell's fans staged a protest and a boycott a few years ago when the deal was first muted. So so there was that. But I suppose in terms of and kind of a political campaign, shall we say, to save it, I suppose it's got legs in recent months. And I mean, it's hard to kind of put a finger on why that's happened, but I think a lot of things have changed. That's kind of that given people hope to look for the plans to be reassessed. In terms of what's happened with Dalymount, with the costs, the doubling, the capacity halving, the cottage estate being reducing, in terms of changes within the FAI, Dublin City Council, there's a new development plan. And I think even just in the last year, there's just more focus on public land for public use and in terms of saving recreational green space. So I think a number of factors have kind of come together. There's new ownership within Shells, and the club itself is in a better footing financially, and there's different personnel involved. And I think it's just kind of the factors come together and people have decided to join in this campaign. And now it's about making it more than Shelburne, which it has become in the last few weeks. It's gone from just kind of starting off mainly as a Shelburne thing. And then we're getting people involved in terms of local clubs and residents and local business and League of Ireland fans getting behind it as well. So that's kind of the direction it's taken.
Yeah, look, I've seen the petition and everything been shared around over the last while. I've seen a couple of Dundalk fans sharing it because obviously they have good memories there from cup finals and other fans as well have good memories and good trips to Talca down the year. Yeah. Have you had any official discussions yet with either Shelburne, Bohemians, Dublin City Council, the FAI? Have you had any formal talks with any of those bodies?
Yeah, I mean, we met with Shells prior to our launch. And the public position with Shells is that there's no comment at the moment. Good, bad or indifferent. On Save Talca Park. I mean, we understand Shell's board and ownership's position in terms of they feel that they're tied into a deal with Dublin City Council and obviously with the FAI and with Bowes. And really, obviously, we want to proceed as another way forward. But I suppose it's not about just for us looking for shells to change their position. It's also, and that probably more probable would be, changing the position of Dublin City Council in relation to the sale of Tollgate to fund Dalymount, the change of and then changing the mindset of the FAI as well. So we have been meeting with them. We've met with many councillors across Dublin City Council, most parties at this stage. We're meeting with actually some independents this week. We will be looking to meet the FAI in due course as well. We've had some kind of unofficial soundings there. And look, we're open to talking with Bose as well. I mean, I'm sure you know Bose are kind of have a big priority on community and some of the social aspects that we're kind of drilling home as part of our campaign. So look, we'd be happy to talk to them as well if we had the opportunity.
And I saw the blueprint, the plans for a redeveloped Tollgate Park that your group released recently. They were very impressive, I have to say. So it's not even a case of you want to save Tollgate Park in its current state, because I'm sure you'll all admit, as great of memories you all have there, Tollgate Park in its current state, probably it's coming towards the end of its days as a viable League of Ireland venue. It does need redevelopment, and the plans, as I said, were very impressive. But I suppose, again, you've probably seen this argument yourself online. Is it realistic that Dublin City Council are going to fund two stadiums quite close to each other in proximity?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few points in that. I mean, yeah, look, obviously in the current state, the stadium can't go forward. The same with Dalymount Park. But, yeah. I mean, it has to be remembered as well, the two main stands in Tollgate Park, which are the Richmond Road stand and the Riverside stand, we believe they're actually structurally sound, and the capacity between those two stands alone, if it was brought back to full capacity, it would be close to 6,000 just in those two alone. So, I mean, our plan sets out that phase where it would be a reseeding and a re-roofing and some general repairs. And for that job alone, that's only a very small portion of the expense. So that is one thing to be said. Our big point is that we're looking to refurbish two stadiums as opposed to bulldozing and rebuilding a brand new stadium. And in terms of the cost to the taxpayer, between the two refurbishments and the new builds, you're talking roughly the same, but the benefit you're getting in terms of the communities. And I know you talked about the stadiums quite close together, and that's true. But I mean, they do serve very, you know, some of your listeners might be as familiar with those areas in North Dublin, but they actually do serve quite different parts of the community. They're on different transport lines. I mean, for Tollgate Park, you know, most of the, in terms of Shelburne at the moment, supporters would be through the Dart Line, Holt Road, Mile High Road, whereas Bose in Dalymount is a totally different side of North Dublin that's served there. So, but also in terms of, we don't only use it in its current state as it is now, but also in terms of its actual usage and who it's used by. I mean, we have been engaging with up to about 10 local clubs. We've got letters of support from Drums and Home Farm, who are two clubs whose Fever's home was Tollgate Park. So we think it should be opened up in terms of use. So it shouldn't be in its current state, both from a physical point of view and from a practical point of view as well.
Brilliant stuff. And just for anyone that didn't see the plans, I know that there was more than just a football stadium in there. You had other plans for the community as well. So maybe if any of our listeners that didn't see that, you might run them through that very quickly.
Yeah, look, thanks for mentioning that, because as I said, we're looking to make it more than just about Shelburne senior teams, men and women. We're also looking to make it about, as I said, firstly, that local clubs can actually use it with a hybrid surface and it can be open to clubs, which it isn't at the moment in practice. And then also the community aspects. We're basically proposing that we would give one end of the stadium, which is Drumcondra end, as a new build community facility that would have effectively whatever you want. But the initial proposals and plans and drawings have a creche, a gym, you could have public toilets, you could have a facility where it is an enterprise centre for offices and that kind of thing. So, I mean, as I said, it's very much fluid in terms of what it could be used for. But we think because the stadium is owned by Dublin City Council, it is the people's stadium, essentially. So we feel that it should be more than just what it's currently used for, both from a sporting sense and then just from a general community and business sense as well.
Mm-hmm. I suppose, again, for listeners that maybe haven't been following this story too closely over the last few years or don't understand, as you said, maybe the kind of dynamics of Dublin City itself, what is the main opposition to moving to Dalymount Park? Why are Shells fans so opposed to it?
Well, I suppose it's not, and we are trying to make it less about just Shells fans, because we think it's a bigger issue than that. But I mean, It is pretty unprecedented for a stadium of that's been the home for one club to have that stadium sold to fund a new build of their rival club. That is quite, if you actually just take a step back and look at that, that's quite an unusual thing. So I think any club would have an issue with that, especially, you know, Bowes have been in the Fisburgh community for over a century, like, you know, that they're well embedded. So from a Shelburne perspective, that's where the issue is. There's also the issue in terms of, you know, public land for public use and getting rid of green space in the city. And I think during COVID, we've learned to appreciate that green space more. And just the history around Tulk. I mean, like, it is, as I said, yeah, it's only been Shelburne's home since 1989. Now, that is for the only home for a lot of Shell fans know, or at least the most, the stadium they've gone to the most for some older people that are Shell fans. But also the history that's going back to, you know, to 1924, and in terms of internationals, men and women, junior, senior, cup finals, drums, home farm, etc. So it's not just Shelburne's objection to get rid of it. It's we think the wider football community, and we've got a lot of League of Ireland support for that already. So,
and you mentioned there you don't want to see the green space go as well, which is very important. Do we know what if Tolka does go by the side? What goes in there instead? Has that been made public?
Well, it's public that they're expecting Dublin City Council looking to sell that land and also rezone it as well, which is in the hands of the councillors, and that's what we're looking to persuade them not to agree to sell it and to rezone it. But it would, if it's 15 million in the Daily Mount Park budget, which at the moment is 35.6 million, 15 million of that is dependent on the sale of Tulka Park. So ultimately, it needs to be sold and to private developers. Otherwise, you know, the funding model at Daily Mount would be in jeopardy if the land was kept for recreational, because it's just not practical, obviously, if it's being sold for that amount of money. So that's the situation. I mean, in terms of, and you mentioned costing earlier as well, I didn't actually explain. So, I mean, our proposal is costing anywhere between 10.1 and 13.8 million. And that's with either a 10% contingency or a 50% contingency. So we've been quite honest in terms of our costings. We're foreseeing them, you know, things that the cost may go up. But we think, given the nature of what we're looking to do, which is refurbishment, that it's quite realistic. So that's what we're going to put to the table. And we hope that DCC and FAI and other stakeholders will come on board with that plan.
And you've said it a few times that it's kind of more than just Shelburne Football Club. And I know from looking at your socials the other day, you're out leafleting the local community as well. What was the reaction like from locals?
Yeah, look, it's been really good about the leafleting and before that as well. I mean, a lot of the residence groups came along to the launch night. We had some good, we've had dialogue again with residence groups. We're probably talking about 10 groups, and obviously there's a lot of individual residents behind it as well. The majority of residence groups have been positive so far. One residence group we've engaged with had some concerns, but we're obviously trying to put forward the argument that we think this is better for locals than what the alternative might be, which would be probably high-rise development and that type of thing, and add to further congestion. But the locals have been the majority being on board. Same with local business. We've contacted a lot of local businesses who are on board, obviously, and the local clubs that we've talked about as well. So we really, and obviously, we've had a lot of councillors who've offered their support, and we're still kind of working on other councillors who we kind of maybe need to convince a bit more. But no, the reception's been really good, and also with League of Ireland clubs. I mean, as you said, like, a lot of people have great fond memories of beating Shells to win leagues or just winning cups in Tulka Park or winning big matches. And, you know, people don't want to see it go, I think, across the league. I think there is a mood that we're getting that people respect the heritage of the stadium that's there nearly 100 years.
And finally, do you feel your group speaks for the vast majority of Shelburne fans? Has there been any kind of polling done on the general support of where they'd rather be? Would they rather go ahead and move into Daily Mount, or do they want to stay in Tulka? What do you think the general kind of feeling is amongst the supporters?
I mean, generally, I'm careful to try and speak on behalf of all Shelburne fans, because I don't know, that might come across a bit wrong. But to be honest, I'm more confident now given this campaign. You know, I would have thought that most Shelburne fans were pro staying in Tulka Park and not moving to Daily Mount. But I mean, especially since this campaign has launched, the sense, I just think it's unanimous. It feels like I haven't come across too many, if any, Shells fans who aren't supportive of it. I'm sure there's a few, but there's not very many that I've engaged with. In terms of polling and that kind of thing, I mean, I know the 1895 Trust, which is a Shevlin Supporters Group, did polling amongst their members, and it was the respondents, it was 100% in favour of the Safe Talker Park campaign. So that was obviously, you know, a great boost to hear that. And everything else we're hearing from kind of people that aren't associated with groups is very positive as well. So look, we're delighted.
John, very interesting stuff, I have to say. Look, we can only wish you the best luck with the campaign, and we might touch base down the road again and see how it's coming along.
Great. Look, and if people want to go on to SaveTalkerPark.com to see what our proposal is and to sign our petition, and there's a tool there for people to contact their local councillors and TDs, and we welcome that from anyone, not just Shells fans, as I said.
And you've got some social channels as well, if you want to let people know where they can find you.
Save Talker Park's on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook as well. So look, and just get in touch. You can contact us from the website as well, SaveTalkerPark.com. So look, thanks a million, Kieran.
John, brilliant stuff. Thanks very much.
Take care. See you. Bye.
Keep up to date with the latest League of Ireland news and updates by following us on social media. Search for Between the Stripes on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Are you enjoying the show? Please consider buying us a beer via our website betweenthestripes.net or head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BTSLOI. Thank you for your continued support of Between the Stripes.
Yeah, some really interesting stuff from John, and thanks to himself and all the lads at the Save Talker Park campaign for volunteering to chat to me over the last couple of days. Got some very useful and interesting information from them all, so enjoyed the discussion, and I'm sure we'll touch base with them again soon. Lads, let's move on. Bray against UCD. I'll go to you this time, Gary.
Yeah, tough old game here for Bray. As we touched on already, Shelton absolutely obliterated them at home, and it's going to take a lot of soul searching for Bray to be able to put a stop to UCD. I think UCD will be hurting from that game against Cove to lose, you know, against a Cove team that just haven't been doing a whole pile this season. I think UCD will come back out, and probably they're looking at the table going, well, we're not just going to let Shells run away with it either. So expect Shell or UCD to come out with the blocks early doors, and it could be one or two up in the first half, I think. But 3-0 for me for UCD.
Jeez, you're really laying the knife into Bray this week. Getting a very difficult to call this game. Two very leaky defences. Bray are probably struggling to score goals, whereas that's not an issue for UCD. But as we've mentioned with UCD, if they do hit the front, they find it hard to close out a game. So they might just leave a window open for Bray. With Bray being at home, I think they'll take that opportunity. So I can see this being a high scoring draw. I'm going to go 2-2.
Funny you should say that, because I've got it down as a draw, but I just think this one could be a bit of a... I think Bray might just try and shut up shop on this one. Just get something out of this game. I've got to go 0-0 on this one.
Okay, interesting stuff. Let's move on. Athlone against Cork. John, let's stick with you.
Well, Cork have been hopeless, haven't they? And although we know Athlone's defence can be poor, I fully expect them to bounce back after that defeat against Galway. Cork have offered next to nothing this season. They've lost to Cove, and then they've lost at home to Cabo. So 2-0 to Athlone here.
Okay. Gary?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it would be 2-0. I think Athlone will just squeeze a 1-0 win out of this one, but look, I have no faith in Cork in doing anything in this game. I think Athlone will be sour from that, you know, such a late loss against Galway, and with Galway being rubbish this season, that'll probably hurt Athlone. But Athlone, just on a separate point, they've been kind of, you know, they haven't been running great in the last few weeks.
No. Yeah, they're under a little bit of pressure now. As I said, they're only in them playoffs on goal difference.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think it's... you know, I don't think it's fantastic that the trajectory that Athlone are on at the minute. It's a good opportunity here to stop that. And, you know, even it's not the Cork of old, it's always nice to beat Cork anyway. So I think 1-0 for Athlone in this game, and that'll do them the finest.
Well, Athlone is the last team I'd probably pick in this league to win a game 1-0. I just don't see it. They just, their defence is too leaky. You've mentioned that they're kind of blowing hot and cold in recent weeks. Definitely are, but home form not too
more
bad.
More cold than hot.
Yeah, yeah. Their home form is not too bad. It's the third best in the league, although it's not overly impressive either with 9 points from five games. But Cork City, they've only taken 2 points on the road all season. So I think Athlone will win this. I think they'll have too much firepower for them. I think they'll win it 3-1.
Cork have a worse away record than Wexford. Now, that's saying something.
Yeah, that's absolutely stunning when you think about it. Let's move on. Galway against Cavan Teely. Go on, Gary. Stay with you for now.
Really hard to, like, as much as dumping on Galway at the minute, and deservedly so. This is going to be a very, very tight game because the way Galway seem to be able to dig out results in the 90 plus minutes. It could be a very, very tough evening at the office for Cabo because Cabo are blowing hot and cold themselves. Mm. They're not the most, you know, their away form isn't too bad, but they're not the most reliable sides at the moment. Like, it's kind of hard to really figure them out.
Yeah,
fully.
I'm actually just going back through there. Because when you said it, in my mind, Cavan Teely inconsistent, but is that actually true or is it just in my mind? I'm looking at it here, right? So let's go back to recent results. Beat Cork, lost to Wexford.
Yeah.
Beat Treaty, lost to Bray. Beat Cove, beat Athlone. So they did actually manage to string two wins together in April, end of April and May. Before that, lost to Shells. Okay, we'll give them that one. Lost to UCD, we'll allow them that. They got they had the walkover game against Galway. They beat Cork and they beat Wexford, so they have actually on occasions this season they have managed to string two wins together. They just haven't done it often enough, but they are certainly very inconsistent. But look, I know you haven't given your prediction yet, but I'm going to back Cavan Teely here. I think they'll get something down in AM&DC Park. I'm going to back them to win 1-0.
Yeah, I don't see that. I'm going to go with 1-1 in this game. And
yeah,
could be another case of Galway digging themselves out with some worldly from 35 yards or something like that, and then everything's all right, which it isn't, by the way. But I think that's going to be the story of the game. I just don't see enough on Galway to do anything against Cabo, and I think Pat Devlin will have the measure of them as well.
Yeah. John, give us your prediction.
So the two lads that tipped Galway for the league have gone with Cavan Teely. I'm going to go with Galway to actually win this one. I think the Cabo are just too up and down for me. I think Galway might sneak this one 2-1.
Fair enough. Let's go to Cove against Treaty, John.
Look, Cove will be buoyed by that result, and they'll be desperate to get a couple of wins on the trot. But Treaty are they've been great so far this season, and I think they'll have too much for Cove, even though it's a fair trip down there, although not too bad from Limerick. So, I'm going to go with an away win, and I'm going to go for a Treaty favourite 2-1.
Yeah, I'm going to follow you on that one. That leaves you, Gary.
Yeah. I had a bit of a think about this because it's really hard for me to decide just the way Treaty are going at the moment. Yeah, they're doing quite well, and they're creeping up that table. But Cove have... You know, they had a couple of wins at the bounce there. I know one was against Cork, of course, and that surprise result against UCD.
Their home form is very poor.
But they pull off another step. Their home form is very poor, but you know their form for the entire season has been very poor. So, if they can turn something around, it's as good a time to do it against Treaty as any. I think it's going to be a tight game. I'm going to go back to the Treaty old reliable result of 1-1.
Very good. Okay. Moving on to the Premier Division, John. Bowes against Drogheda.
Yeah, well, we're singing Drogheda's praises, aren't we, at the moment? I found this quite difficult. I could struggling to... if I was to edge it, I'd probably edge it slightly to Drogheda, but I think this one could be a draw. I'm going to go 1-1 on this.
Okay, John goes 1-1. I'm going to go 2-1 to Drogheda because, again, so impressive them this season. That result against Sligo says it all about them. They're a good side. This isn't a flash on the pan. It hasn't just been a good start to the season. They are a good side. Bowes, we've touched on it, very leaky at the back. If they're leaky against this Drogheda side, there's threat from all over the park. Their main man, Chrissy Lyons, is on form, but they've got loads of threat the fullbacks, the defenders are capable of scoring goals, creative Mark midfield Doyle players. Well. They've got Gary Deegan hole in the midfield. You've touched on Mark Doyle there as well. What a really good side Drogheda are. We probably haven't praised them enough, even though we have, but we should be praising them more. Yeah. I think this, a result to go to Daly Mount, even though Bowes haven't been firing this season, to go to Daly Mount and win would really say something about this Drogheda team. I think they do a back them 2-1.
Yeah, Kieran, totally agree. I'm going to follow you on the 2-1. I was kind of thinking maybe a high-scoring draw, 2-2, but I don't know who's going to do the scoring for Bowes. Do you know what I mean? Like Georgie Kelly got a hat-trick there a few weeks ago and hasn't been seen since. You know, I don't think Bert had a good game at the weekend either. Ali Cooter, you know, I was impressed with his goal, but he's not going to carry it himself either, you know.
Yeah.
I just don't see enough in Bowes. No. And, you know, we look back at previous seasons, you know, you would have always had them winning, you know, winning a lot of their games. So
it's a huge game for Bowes, isn't it? Because Drogheda is the team directly above them. They could suddenly get caught adrift a little if they lose this.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be a bit of a gap there, and next thing you know, they're not really looking down, but they're like, oh, Jesus, now there's a real gap between us.
I think the situation they might find themselves in, it's all well and good now saying, look, if we get in top four, we'll be fine. Cup final always goes the way of one of the top three. That just might not happen this year. You just don't know. Especially when we're in a time where we're still finding our way through COVID. There'll be hopefully more fans in stadiums towards the end of the year. But you still just don't know what could happen. There could be a surprise result somewhere along the way. You just wouldn't know who might win a cup this year. So you can't be relying on that either. And if they lose this one, Pats were to win, suddenly there's a big gap between them and third place. And Europe is starting to look a little bit tedious. So huge game for Bowes. Big pressure on their shoulders. Whereas I don't think there's any pressure on Drogheda.
No. They can keep moseying on. I'd say the way Longford and Waterford are going, if Drogheda didn't win another game this year or get another point, they're probably still safe. So you did highlight it, Kieran, and you're probably right. We haven't praised Drogheda enough. They've been absolutely brilliant this season, and hats off to Clancy and Doherty there, doing a fantastic job. But I still just can't see enough in Bowes to get anything out of this game. They'll do a lot of huffing and puffing, but there isn't just enough end product there to get the goals that they need to win the Drogheda.
Brilliant stuff. Right, this is what I'm looking forward to previewing. Big game at Orient on Friday night. Dundalk against Longford Town. A relegation 6-pointer. Who thought we'd be saying it? But look, you know, I very rarely predict Longford will win games these days. So I'm going to go straight up, going to put my neck on the line here. I think Longford Town go to Orient on Friday night and win. I'm predicting a 2-1 win for the Town and a BB to give away a goal.
Come on, the Town. Totally agree, Kieran. Sorry, John, I didn't want to cut across you, but I did anyway. I fully agree, Kieran. I think Longford Town are going to win this game. Just with all the crap going on with Dundalk, more off the field matters than on the field matters at the minute for them all over the shop. So 2-1 to Longford for me. Hopefully Rob Manning will get back on the score sheet again.
Now, I'd never tell Darragh Doyle how to do his job, because how many times last season did me and you come on here,
about to
question team selection, question tactics? We thought we knew it all. We knew nothing. He got it right. He got us promoted. But Darragh, if you're listening to this, and I know you listen most weeks, please, 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 the game plan has to be hammer crosses on top of that crossbar. Get shots in from range and have the fellas chasing them in, because I am telling you, this goalkeeper will give us something. If the ball is at his feet, I don't care if A. Durbin has to run from his own box to charge down a BB. He's to do it, because we will get something off this goalkeeper. I can feel it in my blood. So come on, the Town. Get stuck into them. From the off. John, what do you think?
Well, I'm going to burst your bubble, lads, I'm afraid.
John.
We already got two giveaways, didn't we, in the reverse fixture in this one.
But do you know what? That was the only game where we've probably created bucket loads of chances. Even
we were very good this match. But what has me worried tactically about Longford is the way teams have sussed them out pretty early this season, and that's forced. You look at the way Longford didn't do much short last season. It was all about playing out from the back. Yeah. But the only couple of chances that Longford did that, Pats pressed them straight down and forced Longford most of the match to go direct, to go long ball. which played right into their hands with the defence that they have, Barrett and the
likes. Sorry, the coins in the Dundalk lads' pockets will be weighing them down. They won't be able to press.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, I mean, Dundalk are a shambles at the moment, aren't they? So, you know, if Longford are going to get anything, you'd like to think it's going to be this match. They are starting to look like they're struggling to where the next point victory is coming from Longford. That's, like I say, it's 14 matches without a win. So I hope they can get something here. But, you know, like I said, going back to the last time, the only way Longford got his draw was Cherry doing a couple of blunders. You know, if Abebe does the same in this match, then Longford have every chance. But I've got a horrible feeling that Dundalk are going to win this. I'm going to go 2-0, lads. Sorry.
Terrible stuff. Let's move on. Sim, hats against Sligo. I'll stick with Mr. Negative. Go on, John.
Well, I was impressed with Pats. Very, very impressed against Longford. They'd certainly done their homework. They've some real good individual talents. Sligo for me, they were top. I think they've just gone a little bit off the boil, and I know Rovers aren't really taking much advantage. I know they're top, and that sounds crazy, but I think it could be a tricky day at the office for Sligo. I'm going Pats 2-0 on this one.
Oh, I don't see that at all. Sligo have the best away record in the league. We've mentioned it time after time in recent weeks, this steal about them. I think this is going to be a really difficult game for Pats, because you go back to the game against Dundalk where they had all the ball, the opposition sat in, they couldn't break them down. I see Sligo going up there doing something similar. They'll sit in against Pats. Now, if Pats work on what they did against Longford even further, the late runners into the box, the lovely link-up play, the little intricate one-twos, the triangles and all that, then you'd like to think they'll create chances and make something happen. But this is going to be a much better side than they played against Longford, to be totally honest, and all due respect to our own town, where we're definitely a level below Sligo. I think Sligo well organised, they'll set up to be dangerous on the break. I can see this one being a draw, though. I'm just not really sure what score. There's so much quality on the pitch. Even look to Sligo, look at Gibson, look at Figuera. You'd like to think there'll be goals, but I just think the two teams might cancel each other out a little bit. I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, I suppose...
Very difficult to call, I have to say. Very difficult.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. I think with Pats, they were very good the other night, but they're only playing against Longford. Longford are on a different plane altogether.
There was 10 minutes or so in that second half when Longford equalised. Pats were very shaky, looking very wobbly. I think a better team would have exploited them, but once they got over that, they were very, very good. But that's what I said earlier. There's lots of scope still for improvement, and lots of improvement in that Pats team, which is encouraging.
Yeah, no, there is. Well, it's probably not the... You don't have too much room for improvement. You know, we're almost at the halfway point of the season. We don't want to be looking, oh yeah, we can get better. You know, you want to be coming towards the finished article. You know, it's going to be getting very tight at the top now. So you don't want to be going, we'll get it next week.
Then again, looking to July, I think if they can get another centre back in, I think that'll help them as well. I know we're talking about a striker, but I know Paddy Barrett had a very good game against Longford, but again, that's one of the weakest signs in the league. He was very poor against Dundalk. I think the game against Longford's only the fourth time this season he's completed a full 90 minutes. So fitness is an issue there. I think he gives you a chance. I just do. Yeah. I think he just looks the weak link in that back four for me. I know they were missing Sam Bone the other night, but I think if they can get another really well-rounded centre-back in there, I hate to even say it, but obviously it won't happen now because he's signed on for the rest of the season with Longford, but somebody like Aaron O'Driscoll, I think, would slot into that Pats back four beautifully.
Yeah, I know, and it's hard to... I know we've mentioned loads of times in previous episodes that Aaron O'Driscoll has been so good for Longford this season, hasn't really put a foot wrong. Probably wasn't brilliant for the Coughlin header the other night.
No, his game against Pats was the worst game he's had this season. He still wasn't terrible by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah,
but
it's hard to believe that. I
understand he didn't have a full week's training for one reason or another, so we'll allow him that one.
Yeah, but we're also saying that the main centre back for a team that's battling relegation at the moment would improve a team that's third in the league. But I don't fully disagree with you either. He's a brilliant player. I know he has some connection to St. Pat's as well, so maybe we could see him in a Pat shirt. Maybe in 5 years' time, it would be great for me after he becomes a legend at Longford Town, please, Aaron. But look, on the whole, and looking at this game, I would probably be edging towards Sligo. I know Pats are going to have fans back in the game, and that chap with the bell will be there, and he was outside the ground and at Bishopsgate on Saturday. Just highlight, I don't know who was saying that we should have let him in. On what planet would we let someone in like that? Come on, let's remember where we are. But I think it's going to be a 1-1 draw. It's going to be a very, very cagey game. But saying that, I think Sligo could pip it. But I'm going to stick with a 1-1 draw for which would be a decent result for Pats. Because Sligo are very good this season.
Can you describe a bell as an instrument? I suppose you can. I suppose there's a certain skill to it. But I was going to say, if we all rocked up to grounds with instruments, sure, we'd have entire bands in the stadium at this stage, if that was the way you could get in through COVID.
I think it was just the fact that he was on his own or something like that. Oh, fair play to him. But he had no ticket. He had no business being there. So not a hope of getting in, chap.
Right, let's move on. Waterford against Shamrock Rovers. Rovers have been struggling, Waterford improving, but surely if Shamrock Rovers have enough here, John.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? Been a bit disappointed with a few of Rovers forward players. I thought Gaffney had a good game last time out, but there's a couple that aren't quite hitting the marks. I'm thinking the likes of Graham Burke. Now, he might not be fully fit at the moment, but he's certainly not as he has been in previous seasons. But again, I still have them having too much for Waterford. Interestingly, Waterford with Bertram in charge was two ex-Yeovil midfielders in charge of that, because Stephen Maher was in charge of Longford as well at the weekend there.
Yeah, so. I didn't realise that. Do you remember Stephen from his time from Yeovil?
I do, yeah. He played a few games, always looked quite decent, but for some reason he struggled to hold down a first-team berth. You know, he's on the bench a lot, so he didn't play too much. But, good midfielder. I liked him whenever I saw him play. So
yeah, I never knew that. It's strange you never mentioned that, no.
Yeah, it's not like me, is it, to be honest?
No. Bertram is a character, though, as I said earlier on. He is a real character.
He was a real sick note at Yeovil. I think he played about 20 matches over 3 seasons. They gave him some ridiculously long contract. He spent most of it in the treatment room. But look, we'll move on about his management skills, and he got off to a good start. But like I say, Shamrock Rovers, they're back joint top, I think, with Sligo. So I think they'll win this one. They'll have too much. 2-0 for me.
2-0. I'm going to go for, I suppose it's the same as a 2-0. I'm going to go for a 3-1 to Shamrock Rovers. I think Waterford, albeit I said they were improved against Dundalk from when I seen them last, this was a really poor Dundalk team they took on. I don't think another team will give them the chances the way Dundalk did, so I think they'll have too much for Waterford. 3-1. Oh, excuse me. Go ahead, Gary. Sorry, folks.
Yeah, I can't see Waterford. You know, they're probably a bit early to see the total impact of Mark Bertram, yes, but look, I think Shamrock Rovers need to be winning this game and winning it comfortably enough. I think anything other than 2 or 3 nil, and I'm going to go with 2-0. But anything other than that would be a right pain in the ass for Stephen Bradley and Rovers.
And thankfully, from my nose's point of view, we're at the final game now. It's Finn Harps against Derry City, a local derby. Harps won the last meeting between the two. They're still playing quite well. Derry have improved. Could be a tricky one to call this, John.
Yeah, I can't really call it. So I've gone for a 1-1 draw with this one, because you write Harps off at your peril, even though Derry are fast improving under Higgins. I think Harps, they'll always throw you a curveball. So I'm going to go 1-1 on this one. No doubt it'll be your best mate, Foley, with the goal for Harps.
No doubt about it. You took the words out of my mouth. Sure. They'll have fans in the ground as well, Harps, so that could really add to it. But wouldn't surprise me if we see a few Derry fans peeking in through the fence too. So it could actually be a good little atmosphere up there in Ballybuffet. So me and John Boko 1-1. That leaves you, Gary. Final prediction of the night. The lucky
one
last. Ooh, big one.
Yeah. I just think, you know, Harps are, you know, they're a steely old team, and Derry just seem to be a bit soft still. I think if this game was after the transfer window and Rory Higgins got a bit of time to himself.
Great record on the road since Rory came in, though. Does that come into your equation at all?
Nah, not really.
Okay.
they're not, you know, doesn't really feature for me for this one. I don't have any faith in Derry at the moment. They're up and down, hot and cold. I know, as you said, they haven't lost in a good few games, and fair play to them, but I just think that run is coming to an end now. They were bailed out a couple of times in those games. A couple of those draws were very lucky against Longford and Bowes. So, you know, it could be a very different story for them if those didn't come to pass. So, 1-0 Hearts for me. I don't think Alan Foley will score, though.
Lads, before we round up the show, I suppose we'll talk about the potential opponents for European opposition. I know by the time this airs tomorrow, we'll probably be aware of who each team is playing. But just to get a brief idea of how things might shape up, I suppose we'll start with the champions first, Shamrock Rovers. It looks very difficult for them, doesn't it? Because they can get Malmo, Legia Warsaw, Slovan Bratislava, or the Lincoln Red Imps from Gibraltar. So obviously Rovers fans keeping their fingers crossed and their toes crossed that it'll be the team from Gibraltar they face, John.
Oh, 100%. 100%. They would win that if they got that draw. But let's face it, on the all possibility of likelihood, they're going to get one of the other three. And unfortunately, I cannot see them progressing against any of those teams. Look, it's tricky, isn't it, when they're not seeded? But you know, they will be crossing every finger for that match against the Gibraltar side, the Lincoln Red Imps. Get that. But you know, they've only got to win a round or two in to be able to get through to one of the cup group stages. But and they'll certainly do that if they get through and if they get the draw against Red Imps. But if it's any of the others, it's going to be an uphill battle.
Yeah, let's move on to Dundalk, Gary. I mean, any other year you'd be looking at this and thinking, "Wow, this is easy pickings." They can get a team from Finland, FC Honka. They can get John. You'll enjoy that one. A trip to Newtown in Wales. They can get Mosta. I think they're from Malta. They can get a team from Liechtenstein, or they can get a team from Macedonia. I mean, any other year, Gary, you'd be licking your lips at that. But yeah, at the moment, you can't be sure.
No. Not really. Is it even a good thing that they're playing in Europe at the minute? You know what I mean? Like, there's so many problems for them. Is this going to even be a concern? Obviously, it will be a concern. I'm not totally crazy. And the financial impact of it as well would be huge. But it's really hard to see, you know, they're doing so poorly in the league. All the off-field rubbish is going on. It's just such a mess. And now they have to worry about playing in Europe as well. Regardless of who the opposition is, I'm going to find it very hard for them to get through, because wherever they're playing, obviously did well enough in their own league to get through it.
Yeah.
And won't be any pushovers either, no matter what country it's from. You know, like, even you look back and who was it? I can't remember. The Luxembourg team that were bet by UCD, like, That was insane, you know, and I know UCD were in the first division at that point. They looked at UCD as a bunch of children, and they got bet over two legs, and their own fans were roaring abuse at them. It was very funny, but you know, anything can really happen. But I really don't see, regardless of the standard of opposition, or the standard of the country that Dundalk's opposition come from, I don't think that really has a bearing, because that team is obviously decent enough to get through their own league, get into this position to play Dundalk. And the way Dundalk are just going at the moment, I don't see them being able to get through it. They might get through a round or two, but I don't think they'll be going much further.
Yeah, Dundalk have the benefit of being seeded in this, but it is a real slog to get to the group stages on this. So
they're seeded for the first couple of rounds, though. I mean, you'd like to think get through a few rounds, pick up a few pounds, but with everything going on,
they could get Spurs in the playoff round or something like that. You know, that's the problem with this tournament, and very, very difficult for any of the Irish contingent to get through to the actual group stages, as opposed to Rovers. And unfortunately, this comes down to our low, the low coefficient. And
lads, we've got major breaking news out of Dundalk. LMFM are reporting that the ex-Dundalk player Dave Rogers is going to be appointed as the first team manager at Dundalk FC, with Giuseppe Rossi as his assistant. Jim McGinton will return to his role as sporting director. Stephen McDonnell, who has been assistant magician, will revert to his role as academy manager. So just to recap there, Dave Rogers, who had been linked as a potential assistant manager to Jim McGinton, is now going to get the top job at Dundalk, according to LMFM. Gary, what do we make of this?
Well, it's really hard to know. Like, there was such a rigmarole with Dave Rogers. He's out, he's in, he's over, he's back. And now he's the first team coach, and he was only ever going to be going in as the assistant manager. And now, what's his title going to be? First team coach?
I'll have to read the article again. I'm flicking through the phone here frantically after that. First team manager.
Right. Okay. Well, fair play to him. He managed to do some negotiating or something like that to get the top job, but. I suppose, you know, if they wanted him in as the assistant to whoever, just goes to show like where the state of it that Dundalk are in, and you know, after the hundreds of applicants that they got, and they're all brilliant applicants, and now it was a lad that, no disrespect to Dave Rogers, of course, he's taken what he's been offered. He was supposed to go in as assistant, and now he's number one. And assume he's going to take that over that position this week. Is that right, John?
I'm hearing conflicting reports now that this might not be the case either. So the story rumbles on at Dundalk FC. Really does.
All right. Who's saying that? That's not the case.
We'll come back to this. I'm catching up with breaking stories here. So had you asked me who would be the next Dundalk FC manager at lunchtime, I'd give you a different... But he says Vinnie Pert set for a sensational return to Oriel Park. So we've got totally conflicting stories coming out of news outlets in Dundalk. One has reported that Dave Rogers is set to take the job. James Rogers, who we would know very well on this show, very rarely ever off the ball, he thinks Vinnie Pert is set for a return. And I'm just in contact with a source at Dundalk at the moment, and I'm hearing the same as James Rogers has said, that Vinnie Perth is the next man in.
God, wow, that's really interesting. I can't believe Vinnie Perth is taking that job back, considering the way he left it last year, and hasn't exactly improved since he left. Really surprised by that, but kind of goes to show that how. What a poor position Dundalk are in, and if getting the lad you sacked 12 months ago, or let's say maybe not sacked but parted ways, as the saying goes, if he's the lad, the best out of the hundreds of applicants 12 months later, wow, it's a very interesting story, and it'll be interesting to see where they go from here.
It's got to the stage where we can't even keep up with the news. It's just developing so quickly. James tweeted this 20 minutes ago that Perth was set for a return, and LMFM tweeted that story pretty much about half an hour ago or so. So look, they actually posted the story at 8:27. So half an hour ago, pretty much. So look, we're probably not going to get a concrete answer tonight on this, but. That just shows the madness, the total conflicting reports. But
it's very hard for Vinnie Perth to go back in there with basically a brand new team from 12 months ago. And the lads that were left over, like Chris Shields is heading off in a few weeks. He'll be just getting to wave goodbye to Chris Shields. Like, he hasn't, like, it's going to be a and huge,
He's going into a job where, if you believe what's in the papers, which you can't always do, as we're seeing right now, Magilton doesn't want Perth.
Yeah.
How do you work with a man that doesn't want you there, allegedly?
You don't do it very well.
John, what do you make of this crazy situation?
Oh, I don't know what to make of it. And I don't think there's anything decided. I just think, who knows whether it be... Perth going back would be ridiculous for a start. And Rogers coming in as manager again, it's very strange. Look... I think we just have to wait until we get some confirmation from the club, by the way.
Yeah, that's one of the craziest few minutes we've ever had on this podcast.
You'll probably be waiting a while for a confirmation from the club as well.
Yeah.
Look,
It'll be Roddy in charge next week. Mark my words.
Yeah. Next week will be an interesting podcast, and hopefully we'll be speaking about Longford having gone up to Oriel and won in the meantime. But maybe on Friday we might get some clarity. But look, let's very quickly wrap up tonight's show. We were about to move on to Derry. Gary, did you get their potential opponents for us there?
Well, unless they reeled in the years and replayed the league last year, I don't see how Derry are going to be in Europe this season.
Sorry, I don't know why my head is gone. Did we come to Sligo? Sligo, no. Let's talk Sligo. So Sligo can get a team from Iceland. They can get a Polish side. They can get Klaksvík that Dundalk beat last year in the playoff round. Or John, they can get our good old Ballytown that we enjoyed a good trip to many years ago.
Oh, come on, Ballytown.
Suppose it's probably fair to say that's the one you'd have the fingers crossed for Sligo.
Yeah, I think so. Although Bala defeated Valletta in Malta last year, so they wouldn't be any pushovers neither. And they ran, I can't remember who they played the next round, Steaua Bucharest or something. I think they run them very close. So we know in Chris Venables they've got a scorer there, who somebody that put the ball into that. But look, I think they'll be happy with the draw, the options they've got there. We saw Klaksvík beaten last year, so they've a few good options. But like I say, very, very difficult to progress to the group stages on this one. I think the most I can hope for is get through a couple of rounds and enjoy the money that comes with it.
And I think probably Bose, it's fair to say, probably have the easiest potential looking set of opponents. Starnan, I remember them. They played a League of Ireland side a couple of years ago, didn't they, John? Do you remember Starnan from Iceland?
Yeah, they did, and I think it was Cork, but I might be wrong, but I do remember them playing against one of the League of Ireland sides.
Yeah, we have our good friends, TNS, the New Saints, or as Gary likes to call them, Total Network Solutions. Garisa United, I think they're from Malta, and we've got Europa FC from Gibraltar. That looks a great draw for Bose, but I suppose if they get the two strongest sides there is probably Starnan and the New Saints, so... Bose had wanted to tighten up in the defence because, look, Bose don't need any introduction to TNS. They know all about them from many moons ago under Pat Fenlon. But if they can tighten up at the back, I would really like to think they can get through that round of Europe.
I think so because, you look at TNS and then they're not dominating as they were in the Welsh League as they have done sort of when they won it umpteen years on the trot and they were full time and nobody could get near them. You know, Kef and Druids now are a good side and there's a couple of sides that are running them very, very close. So look, they're not the force that they used to be. I think, I don't know if Dean Ebby's still there. So familiar face.
Probably on holiday, John.
Could be on his holidays. Yeah, we don't know. We might miss this one.
He's a busy man.
There's some really good options. They'll again crossing their fingers that they get Europa, Gibraltar and opponents.
Yeah, look, let's take a breather. That's going to be the end of this week's show. Absolutely dramatic stuff coming out with Dundalk this evening. We're still no clearer on the situation, but yeah, my sources are telling me that it does look like it'll be Perth going back in there. So. We can only wait and see. Lads, I suppose, thanks for another really good show. Thanks to Mark Bertram for speaking to me the other night after the game. I really enjoyed chatting with Mark. It was good to see the new Waterford owners at Oriel as well. That's always good to see. And thanks to John from the Save Tolka Park campaign for having a chat with me as well. We'll be back again next week. You've probably noticed not just as active on social media as we have been over lockdown because obviously the day job has taken over again. So what I'd love if every single one of you listening to this week's show, if you've got this far, if you've stomached us this far, if you could please share the link on your socials, let it be, if you're listening on Spotify, share the link or go to our Twitter page or our Facebook page and find the post where we advertise this week's podcast and give it a share because we're not able to get it out there as much as we'd like. But if you're enjoying the show, then that's one little favor we'd ask of you. Give it a share and let's try and get this going far and wide because as you can probably tell, we're very passionate about this league. We love this league. We love bringing this show to you each and every week and we'll continue to do so. So I suppose for tonight and this week, Kieran, John and Gary signing off and we'll see what next week brings, lads. Good night.
Thanks for listening. Check out BetweenTheStripes.net for all your favourite BTS content in one place. See you all next week.